On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
It's our great privilege today for Mother's Day to have with us Suzanne Vinker, a.k.a. the No Bull Mom. She's author, blogger, former middle school teacher, a featured writer at David Horowitz's newsreel. Her new book is The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. Her co-author is her aunt, who is fairly well known, Phyllis Schlafly, the national leader of the conservative movement since the publication of her best-selling 1964 book, A Choice, Not an Echo. She started her national volunteer organization, Eagle Forum, in 1972. The Flip Side of Feminism is available from WND Books, a WorldNet Daily company. Suzanne, thank you very much for joining us on the bookshelf today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I've got to admit to you that one of the exciting things about reading your book is thinking, yes, it's so nice. It's so nice that I'm just not this paranoid guy who has these ideas that's how things are. But what you expose in this book, and you reference a lot of other authors, and happily enough, I've read at least a dozen of them, talk about the truth about feminism. And as you point out, the truth about feminism is it was never about supporting women. It was about supporting liberal women. Tell us a little bit more about how you and your famous aunt got involved in this project.
It actually started out as a completely different book that I had been working on for some time, and it sort of evolved, as often is the case with these things, and I went to her and said, hey, I think you need to join forces with me here. I think the two-generational perspective on this issue would be great when you consider the fact that she and I are both on the same page, because she is 86 and I'm 43, and I think that there is so much confusion surrounding feminism and effect on our society, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, that it's hard to find someone with whom you are in agreement about it. And I happen to know that that she and I were of the same mind. She didn't necessarily know that, but I did. So that's how it came to be.
Well,
and the issue of, I'm going back to what you said originally about feminism.
When you were in college, you discovered that the attitude on campus and among the other women on campus, as well as the professors, was not at all what your parents and your famous aunt had espoused to you growing up. When life hands you lemons, make lemonade.
I thought that was a great example, because I was fortunate enough to grow up with a completely different perspective of women and just life in general that was filtered through the minds of the greatest generation, basically, because that's where my parents are about 10 years older than my friend's parents. So I considered that an advantage from that point, because most of my contemporaries, at least in college, had baby boomer parents, and that really is a very different set of values. And so I didn't really think of it that way at the time growing up, but or maybe not even when I was in college, but it's as clear as day now. So it's just that whole different value system between self-reliance, hard work, you know, a love of country kind of a thing, mixed with this whole baby boomer anti-establishment, these sort of mentality. And that, of course, is what feminism falls right in line with. It was always really glaring difference between us, and it was not an issue for me in terms of making friends. I had a great time, and I get along with everybody. But certainly when it came to the real issues, it was like Suzanne was on one side and then, you know, the other people were on the other.
For example, one of the things that you noticed among your peers in college was that you were expected to behave like badly behaved men were supposed to, and that is to seek sex wherever you could. And of course, it was always with no guilt and no consequences. As you put it, people in college thought that all life was like Friends, where no one ever gets a sexually transmitted disease, no one gets pregnant unless they really want to be pregnant, and nobody has to be married in order to get pregnant.
Absolutely, and I took a very divergent view of casual sex at that point. Well, I mean, I always have, but even at that age is what I'm saying. And even my boyfriend at the time did not agree with me on that, so we did have some discussions, interesting discussions about that. Yeah, it was definitely just that whole cavalier approach to sex that I noticed was one of the things that made me different. And so for me, it wasn't personally hard, because I don't really care what other people think. But I think I thought about it in the mindset of other people who I knew were out there that felt this way, but that was not the dominant thinking of the time. And I also knew that those things sort of ebb and flow throughout the generations. I mean, I certainly knew that it wasn't that way prior to the 60s. So I sort of had my finger on the pulse of the issue in general, even back at that time, and didn't really care so much about what other people were doing. But it certainly has been great concern of mine, certainly as a teacher. I became a teacher out of college, and that issue, although I didn't teach sex, I wasn't a sex ed teacher, but certainly that whole topic was of concern to me just from a teacher mother standpoint.
And you were a middle school teacher also.
I was.
And middle school is really where everything crunches up a lot. My wife is a middle school teacher. And the tough thing about it is these are the kids that are not quite children anymore, and yet they're sexualized these days, and they're expected to behave in a manner that once college students were supposed to behave. And now we're seeing this in junior high school.
Right.
Some rather notorious examples that we won't go into on the radio, but because of the fact that casual sex has become this rite of passage thing rather than something you save for marriage. And I'm not surprised your boyfriend disagree with you, because that's the nature of guys. But as you point out, one thing that marriage has traditionally done for millennia is to civilize men. It ties them to one woman and to the children they bear together, which he will then protect because he knows they're his children.
That's a very obviously true, and of course I agree with that completely, view of men and women, but it's not a typical one, certainly of my generation. I mean, it's almost like if you say, put it in that way, sound like their grandparent or something, because they don't want to accept that some of these things are really timeless. I mean, human nature is human nature, and while the times may change, you know, people don't. So it's just, it's not that I'm saying something outrageous, but it's that I'm saying something outrageous for my generation.
Right, exactly. We're talking to Suzanne Vinker, who, along with Phyllis Schlafly, is the author of The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. It's from WND Books, that's a World Net Daily company. And you expose in the book some of this perfect storm that arose in the early 1960s, where baby boomers who are in college and looking to change the world, and then they run into the writings of people like Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem, who are proto-Marxists and unhappily married women, women who are not mothers, and come out with this idea that no real woman wants to stay home and take care of children. That's just a prison, that marital relations are rape, and that the only real way to be a woman is to have a career that's not dependent on any man, and we don't need men, and on and on and on. And unfortunately, this generation that grew up then bought into all that nonsense and never once critically assessed it and thought, why would someone say something like that that's so different than what my parents have lived?
And a lot of them don't think that it's, because they don't necessarily aspire to that exact philosophy that you just described, they think that they will describe that to be something, well, those are just extreme feminists or something. But in fact, the people that espouse what you just explained have affected society in such a way that most people do harbor feminist, absorb feminist myths and assumptions, even without realizing it. Because even if you're not that extreme about it and you aren't, quote-unquote, a man-hater, which I don't think most people are, they don't realize that what they've been fed for 30 years is filtered through women who were men-haters. See, so basically, from the get-go, the message itself is a negative one and a false one. And so, you know, you say something often enough and it tends to become true, I think is the way we phrase that.
Yes.
And people have basically, the way we put it in Flipside, is just gotten advice from the wrong women. That's been the biggest problem. And the biggest issue with feminists is that they give people, they say that the old system is bad, but the reason women are still in a quandary today and more miserable than ever is because feminists didn't provide them any new rules that work. They said these are terrible, but then they haven't provided a means that shows them anything better.
Well, for instance, putting your kids in daycare and going off to the office with briefcase in hand and power suit on, and now you can have it all. But what nobody seemed to wonder is, gee, men are already doing that. Are men happy with their lives? Do they miss their children? The assumption was apparently that men just blithely did all this and never once during the day thought about their kids or thought about their wife and thought, wouldn't it be nice if I could get home? Yeah.
And if they didn't miss out. I mean, they didn't have it all. They did one thing at the exclusion of the other. They had a wife at home doing the other thing. So they were not getting what the wife was getting at home. Each person was performing a specific task, and each person was missing out on something that the other one was getting. So, but that's a wonderful point, because men, of course, are an untapped resource there. We never even think to ask them, gee, would you like to have it all? And are you fulfilled? And how's your identity? everybody going.
Exactly. I can remember my dad coming home from the office. He's an architect, and mom would come up to him. She was a stay-at-home mom until all the four kids were in school, and then she went back and became an art teacher because she had a degree.
That's an excellent point, because that is the case for most women. Most mothers did do that, actually, and have always done that, but you never hear about that.
Right.
You hear about this idea that they never left the home ever for years since they had babies.
Right.
And that's simply not true.
As you point out in the book, The Flip Side of Feminism, feminism as a movement really never gave women any more empowerment than they already had. You talk about your mom, and your mom sounds like my mom. Women who worked their way through college, who had a career that they set aside when they were raising the children, because raising a children is a career. And it's a critical one. And we know now that the kind of a bonding that goes on between a child and a parent in the first 3 years is critical to their intellectual development. And yet, feminism promoted this idea that, which is really a socialist idea, isn't it? That kids are better if they're raised by a commune than if they're raised by their own parents.
Well, and that has been probably of all the myths that have infiltrated into society over the last 30 years, that is undoubtedly the biggest. There is a larger preschool enrollment now than there has ever been in the history of time. And the idea that preschool, and I'm mixing preschool with, well, let's back up for a minute. When we talk about early childhood education, as President Obama loves to do, really, that's a euphemism for daycare.
Right.
What we've done now is we've moved away. Now, when I was young, I'm 43, as I said, I started nursery school, which nursery school is 2 days a week for 2.5 hours a day, roughly. So you're looking at maybe 5 hours of outside of home time from the age of 3 on.
Right.
Not everybody did that. Some people didn't even go to kindergarten, but if they did start school, it was generally in kindergarten. Now, and then we upped that to a year of nursery school, and now we've brought that down even lower to what we call early childhood education, which is essentially what babies are doing, or children are doing, is ending up being in preschool for 3 years.
Right.
So at the age of 2, they're starting a couple of hours of traditional nursery school. Now, technically, if you send a child of that age somewhere a few hours a day, a couple times a week, that is in itself harmless. What people don't ever make the distinction between is that scenario from the all-day, everyday daycare environment. And politicians and feminists do not ever make that distinction.
Right.
That's why they call the whole thing just early childhood education. So they're lumping in somebody like my kids who didn't start anything until they were 3.5, and again, even then, 2 days a week for a couple hours, they're lumping that in with 1 and 2-year-olds who are in daycare all day. Those are two completely different scenarios.
Right.
Well, the same difference between a mother who works part-time and a mother who works full-time. There's no delineations made between these two, but it's the difference between night and day. You cannot lump them under the same umbrella.
But that's what they do all the time, isn't it? Because euphemisms are one of the great weapons of socialists, and feminism is just socialism through a different direction, through a different smokescreen.
Female socialism, feminine socialism.
Right. Another issue that you address in the book, The Flip Side of Feminism, is talking about why it's difficult to be married and to stay married for this generation. I'm 15 years older than you, so that's my kids. They tend to marry later, and they're more afraid of marriage. Now, happily enough, for my children's sake, their parents stayed married all the time that they were children and still are married. But that's not the case with an awful lot of people who are now in their 20s and their 30s and are trying to decide, do I want to be married? Because they don't have role models for marriage anymore because their parents didn't stay married. And I realize that there are extenuating circumstances, but it seems like there are an awful lot of people who get divorced just because it becomes inconvenient or it's not so much fun as it once was.
You know, we're so afraid in this society of offending anybody. So that when we have these huge social issues like single parenthood, for example, or just divorce, we are reticent to say anything negative about it because we all know somebody who's been there. But that fact should not change the reality. And while you can do it in a gentle way, we still have to face facts, and that is that no society can sustain itself if people can't get married and stay married.
Yeah.
So it behooves us to figure out a way to do that. And the fact that things have changed definitely makes it harder. My heart goes out to people who are, in their 20s and 30s today. My heart goes out to myself, people my age, because it's hard for anybody. There's no question about that. But then that's all the more reason to figure out what's going on here. How can we work within the changes that have occurred without messing up this major institution that needs to stay in place. So I definitely, what we do in The Flip Side of Feminism, we have a whole chapter there on marriage, is try to show what it's like to be your average 20, 30, 40-something woman today, or man, who's grown up in this environment where marriage is treated so casually. You get in and out of it like it's nothing, and what that constant sort of drip environment does for a person. Now, they have shown, research has shown, in fact, James Fowler is a social science researcher, and he found through his research that if a sibling gets divorced, we're 22% more likely to divorce ourselves, which is bad enough. But hold on. If our friends get divorced, we are 147% more likely to do that ourselves. That is absolutely astounding.
Talk about peer pressure.
That's exactly right. So what it goes to prove is that if we have an environment where everybody's breaking up, it's like anything else. It just makes it that much easier to break up.
Right.
If we reverse that and we have a society where fewer people are doing that, then it would stand to reason that fewer people would do that. So that is what my biggest concern is looking around at what those messages are and what we've been getting with this drip, and how do we reverse that if we really want to be happy?
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Suzanne Vinker, who's the author, along with her aunt Phyllis Schlafly, of The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. It's from WND Books. There's so much in your book that you address about the modern situation. And one of the things that really resonated with me, I'm sure you see where I'm going with this, is the chapter entitled The Expendable Male. And and one of the things you address in there is the fact that we have a whole industry now that is nothing but helping older women. And it's by older, I mean women who are past the normal childbearing years, who have put off having children because they were having a career, and now they're in their late 30s, they're in their early 40s, and they say, wow, I didn't have it all. I want a child. And they go through all kinds of very complicated procedures in order to conceive their own child, even though there are a lot of health risks for the mother and the child involved in later in life pregnancies. This was not as big a problem in years past because women got married in their late teens or early 20s, and they started having babies pretty much right away. And you didn't have to worry about finding time to have a baby. You just had to find time to make room for another baby.
I think this issue has been one of the most despicable aspects of feminism, all in the name of this idea that there is something better to be had in life than having babies, and teaching young women that they don't have a biological clock when the truth is they do. That is a bold-faced lie, and people have bought into it, and they end up exactly in the scenario that you just described. Who do we have to blame for that? Those are lies that young women are told, and it's wrong. And the reason why we didn't have this 20 years ago, as you said, not 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, or ever before, was exactly as you said, people married younger. But it's not even about encouraging people to marry young. You can still wait to get married if that is what you want, but you cannot wait forever to have a baby. And you can take that up with God or nature, what have you, but that's not anything we can do anything about.
Now, another thing that this does, with all this new technology for getting pregnant, we now have pregnancies that are not conceived in the traditional fashion, shall we say. And we have this new phenomenon of children who never had a father. It's not their parents got divorced, and it's not that they were cohabitating. They never knew a father because their mother didn't know the father. They are just a donor, and popular culture makes it seem like, well, that's just as good as that old fashioned way of doing things. Research and sadly the evidence of wrecked lives has shown that it's not as good a way of having children as for a man and a woman to be married to each other and to raise that child in a family that nurtures that child and looks out for that child. It's just not the same.
No, it's not.
This phenomenon of not needing a man, this kind of fits into this feminist model, though, isn't it? That we don't really need men. They're old-fashioned. They're unnecessary. You don't need a man to complete you. Gloria Steinem said a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. That's an integral part of feminism, isn't it? The sort of removal of men as necessary to women's happiness.
Absolutely. And that is a completely liberal and very left-wing viewpoint. Most reasonable people do not feel that way. And, of course, research shows that most of America is are a right of center bunch, and the only people we hear from, unfortunately, are the left wing women. And that was one of the biggest points that we make in The Flip Side of Feminism. We spent a great deal of time in chapter two naming who what we call the feminist elite are, and how they affect the way the world moves, the way the society moves, because they have the microphone, they have all the power, and that their worldview, which you basically just explained there, is completely opposite of the way most people think. And yet we're not able to get the messages that we need because the people who are in, the people who are most visible are not good role models.
I love this quote of yours. No society can thrive or survive when half its members believe they're oppressed and the other half are told there's no reason for them to exist. And so what you and your Aunt Phyllis came up with is a new roadmap for women. How do we pull ourselves back from this precipice that we have driven ourselves to, led on by the cheerleaders of feminism? What can we do to flip things back around?
Well, the first thing we need to do is completely eradicate all the myths and assumptions that we have absorbed over the last 30 years. Now, that's a very tall order, because if your mother was a feminist, which is so often the case with young women today, you're basically going to have to defy everything your mother told you. And I feel for those people, because I don't have to contend with that. But I have heard from those people, and it is very difficult. You want to believe that the things that your mother told you were right on, but sometimes they're just not. You know, and I actually hear from a lot of those people who are bucking the messages that their mother, their baby boomer mothers taught them. So that's number one. And number two is to realize when you go to college that all the junk that's going to come out of the professor's mouth is going to be left-wing. So you got to take all that with a grain of salt and think for yourself. And just know that going in, because most colleges are that way. Then, of course, you have to accept that the messages that you're going to get when you turn on the television and go to the movies and all of that are still all being filtered through that same feminist lens. Once you see that really for what it is, and the only way to really do that is to buy and read Flipside so you can see what I'm talking about, it becomes very easy to filter the information yourself and realize that you're being misled. So that's part one. And the other part of it is to embrace our specific gender roles, that being female and being male are wonderful things, and they are not the same. And so when people tell you that there really are no differences between men and women, you know in your heart that that's simply false. If you do accept that and you go forward and plan your life, it becomes very easy for you to incorporate that part of yourself, that femininity, without feeling like you have to hide it, okay? Because if you're being told that you're just like a man, then the idea is that you should approach sex and work and career and all of that and family life exactly the same way as men will. But the reality is we do have distinctive roles. Men don't have babies and women do, and that does bring with it a difference that we can't ignore. And so that allows you then to plan your life in such a way where you can have, and actually this is a very positive message, have it all, but at separate times in your life. So the chances of your wanting to have children are great. You probably are. So therefore, let's plan our other life, our outside life, around that, around marriage and motherhood, rather than the other way around. And that's probably the biggest message, I guess, certainly in that one chapter about balance, is that right now you have women who are doing the complete reverse, where the career is the center of your life, and there is no discussion of men and marriage and children at all. In fact, they just sort of happen, you know, whenever you get to it, and they are fit in around this other more important thing. And we're basically saying, just flip that completely and make men and marriage, if that is your goal, if you don't want to get married, that's fine, but probably you will, and therefore make that your center, your nucleus, and then fit the other stuff in around that. And by the way, men do the same thing. You know, men go to work. Most men don't work to live. They live the other way around. Wait a minute. Most men don't live to work. They work to live. They go to a job every day, not because it fulfills them and they get great fulfillment out of that, but they do it for what it brings home. And the fulfillment that they get is also from the home. So it really is both a male and a female. It's just a human, really, issue. Not specifically female, but there is no question that there are special aspects of being female that you need to take into account when you're planning your life.
And vividly difference. There are strengths and weaknesses about both approaches, but together they make a great combination. Men are goal-oriented, women are relational. You need both to be a full human being, but you also need both to be to have a marriage that is successful and fulfilling,
and children need both, and
have great kids.
Children themselves need both.
Yes, absolutely.
Both mom and the dad.
Yeah, I think it's time for married couples to stand up and say, hey, a kid needs a dad, a kid needs a mom. They need both of them, and they need them for different reasons. They're not just the same kind of person with different parts. There's different things going on, and that's a good thing.
And I'm hoping that the younger generation is going to be the ones to say that. I think they will. I think it's going to turn around completely, and I think the young 20-somethings who are now 20-somethings, somewhere down the road, 10, 15 years from now, will talk like that, and that will be the norm.
Let's hope so. Well, Suzanne, books like yours are certainly going to help them to feel strong in their intuition that this is the right way to raise children, the right way to live your life. And I thank you for making time to be with us. Please give my best to your aunt. I'm a big fan of hers and followed her career for decades now and cheered for her and her work against the ERA and with Eagle Forum. And a great, great honor to get a chance to talk to you and to thank you for writing a terrific book.
Thank you for having me.
Do you have any websites or anything you'd like to plug? Because I can put those in there too.
Yeah, well, the website for the book is the title of the book, so it's theflipsideoffeminism.com.
Okay.
And then I also have my own website, SuzanneVenker.com.
Okay, and that is VENKER.com.
V like Victor, EN like Nancy, KER, yeah.
Suzanne Vinkner, our guest today on the bookshelf to talk about her book, The Flip Side of Feminism, What Conservative Women Know and Men Can't Say. It's co-written with her aunt, Phyllis Schlafly, and it's available from WND Books, a WorldNet daily company. Their website is WNDBooks.com. All right, thank you very much. Thanks for joining us for this special Mother's Day on the Bookshelf on WTBF. We'll see you next Sunday morning at 9:30 on FM 94.7 and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 on AM 970 and WTBF.com. Till then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless. Hey, and don't forget to call your mom, and if you're close enough, give her a hug today.